Welcome back to The Wine Show. You are with Jill Upton, and I'm delighted to have a friend of the show back after our so long. It's Mr. Ed Carr from House of Arris. Good morning, Ed. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks to you.
Good. I realise I haven't had you on since September 22, and it's so scary how it feels like it wasn't that long ago, but it's like it's a year and a half ago. So there's quite a lot to fill us in on, I would assume.
Oh, yes, there's certainly been some big changes since then.
So how about, why don't you take the lead with that? What's been happening with the House of Arris brand?
Well, the House of Arris has gone through a change of ownership. It's now owned by DMG Fine Wine. So there's two arms of that in the wine field. That's hand-picked wines as a range of predominantly still wines. Yes. And the House of Arris is sparkling wine. This happened in October last year. The transition started, and it's just been amazingly positive. It's very positive feel in the market. Certainly, William Dong is the owner of DMG Fine Wines and handpicked. Certainly has a no compromise approach to the world of wine making, which is always great to hear. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a transition. There's a lot of work to be done, but it's happening very quickly. And, yeah, we're just building and restructuring a sales team, both domestically and internationally, to take the wine further to the right markets, really.
Further afield.
Just with the wine making, we have kept the same structure, the same viticultural team, the same vineyards, and the same sites that we're making the wine. So we're very confident that we'll be able to maintain and grow the same styles that we have now.
Well, that's exactly what you want to hear. I mean, you don't want anything like that to change. Change of ownership is the only thing that needs it. You've still got all the team in place. And I guess that's no surprise for sort of the caliber of brand that you are. So you just mentioned the markets internationally as well. Who are you finding are your main markets outside Australia?
Well, traditionally, Arris has had a place in the UK, Europe, and nibblings in Asia with Korea and Japan. We don't want to stay with those markets entirely. We think we can spread the brand a little bit more globally. So we do have some product in the US that's starting to look at moving now. And of course, with China potentially opening again, there's always that option there.
Yes.
I guess we realise that we've only got a certain size our pool of resources. The House of Arris wines aren't totally limited, but there is volume caps in supply because we need to maintain the aging policies that we have. So we've got a certain size pie, and we've got to decide where we're going to put each slice of that pie and what size that slice is going to be.
Yeah, of course. Can you just touch on the aging policies that you have? Because this is something I've obviously been very close to your brand for many years, but I think it's interesting for people to actually understand a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think, there's a lot of very good sparkling wine coming out of Tasmania. House of Arris is entirely Tasmanian wine. Mm. Approximately 50% of the fruit that's grown in Tasmania goes to sparkling. But I guess what makes Arris unique compared to the other sparkling brands which have their own styles, Arris is aged for much longer in terroirs. We really believe that the wine needs that extra aging to reach a level of complexity and depth. And so our youngest wines on market are 4 years old at the time of release.
Yes, and that is quite a differentiator for you, absolutely.
Yeah. We have three sort of tiers of age, really. A multi-vintage range at, say, 4 to 5 years by the time they reach market, and vintage, which are 8 years, and then a late disgorged and museum wines, which are 10 years plus. So to put that into context, we've just nearly finished vintage 2024. So we're just picking the last of the fruit this week. The first of those wines won't be on market till 2028. Like the vintage wines won't be on the market till 2032. That's rather...
When you say it like that, it sounds just so bizarre, doesn't it?
And, our late discussion museum wines will be pushing 2035 plus. So
Wow. I'm going to be an old woman by then, Ed.
Well, some of us... get a bit worried about those time frames as well, but it's the commitment to that stock level and that aging that I think will carry the Hasbaz forward.
I absolutely agree, and that's why I wanted you to really go into that there, because I think it's a very big differentiator, and it's just the testimonial of the quality of the wine behind it. So on to those, just on the late disgorge, I think your late disgorge is absolutely stunning. And for my mother-in-law's 80th last year, I actually bought a case and had it delivered to her. And whilst we're all there celebrating and drinking it, which was absolutely glorious, people were asking me about, well, what does late disgorge mean? Now, I gave them the very high-level meaning behind it. But can you explain to the audience what it is, but not so much why it is that you would late disgorge?
Well, the late disgorge wine is a re-release of the Grand Vintage. So the Grand Vintage wine blend is kept in tirage on lees for 7 years. We hold some of that product back longer on lees for a minimum of 10. So it's disgorged later. So hence it's the late disgorge vintage label. The current release is the 2008. And we've just moved to that one last September, sorry, and that's had 13 years on lees. So, that's a massive commitment to time.
Yes.
But, it's just very recently scored 98 points with Halliday. So it's made that time commitment and investment in that wine, really shining through.
Absolutely, and congratulations for that. Goodness me! I must say, I bought another case of. Very clearly, I'm a massive fan of House of Arras, and when I feel like I've saved enough money, that's normally where I'm putting it. So I bought a case of the Blanc de Blanc 2014 last year, and you've just moved to the 2015. I think is it the 15 that's out now?
Yeah, that's the current release.
That would be the current vintage. Yeah, so I had not tasted that, but that 14 is just glorious. And I still think for the price point, it's unbelievable value, like absolutely unbelievable. So how is the vintage? I mean, 24 vintage is what you're currently on. Are you happy with how everything's going?
Yeah, it's been a very much compressed vintage, very much a blur, this one. The very warm year and very dry season gave us a particularly early start. The third earliest start at the winery pressing since 2016, actually. And but it's been so different. I mean, it's we've seen with the warm weather a lot of sugar ripening happening very quickly. Mm-hmm. And but we've seen extremely high natural acidity. So we've really had to leave the fruit on the vine just a little bit longer to for the acidity to reach that palatable level. And I was eavesdropping on you talking before on the radio station, and you mentioned physiological ripeness, and that's what we had to wait for as well, based on just the numbers, looking at the maturity of sugar and acidity. We still found that some of the fruit was just not quite sort of flavour ripe and just had to wait a little bit longer. But it was worth having that little bit of extra patience. And I think we've got fruit with excellent balance now, and that's now mostly in the winery and fermenting. So it will be a year that's, one of the fuller years, I guess, because of the amount of sunshine and the ripeness that's there. But it's going to have this great acidity that will be the backbone of the wine for a very long time. So You know, you don't know until you actually get there, like I'm expecting the 2024 Blanc de Blanc to be quite a strong wine and very typical of the style.
Yes, okay. That's fair. It's very good to know. What sort of quantities are you producing now? I mean, you do produce quite an enormous range of different styles for you know a sparkling house. What's production like?
Our volume is sort of capped a bit by our fruit resource, but across the whole range, we're about 500,000 bottles per year.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That is a lot, and it's all Tasmanian, obviously.
Yes.
Okay.
But that can range down to our museum release, which is like 350 bottles.
Yeah. Release. Sure.
But it very much depends on the label and the price point.
Yeah. Of course. So it was just actually quite fun the other day when I called you to see if you would be able to be on the show. It just so happened you had done a masterclass with Richo.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me about it.
It was just a great opportunity. We had a show in Melbourne and in Sydney at the mm-hmm. each of the cellar doors, and we got very good attendance. And it's what we've done in the past, really, is just to tell people the brand history and get them to, you know, have a look at the current range and open the floor up to questions and, you know, do much as what we're doing now, talking about the brand, but also adding in tasting the wines and just explaining the different labels as well.
Yes, of course.
You know, because the range quite broad now, so it's good to be able to take people through the actual differences and how we achieve those.
Okay, so when you said the difference of the labels, what wines did you have, and tell us, talk us through that?
Now we in that particular tasting, we had the two non-vintage wines. The Brut Elite was the white wine version, the Brut, and the Brut Elite Rosé, which is the inaugural release of that multi-vintage rosé. There was five wines in total. So then we moved to the vintage rosé 2015.
Yes.
And Delicious. Then moved to a couple of Chardonnay predominant wines. So the Blanc de Blanc 15 and the Grand Vintage 15. And so just to be able to explain the difference in the varietal makeup of those blends, the the winemaking policy, the aging profile of those wines. Yeah. So really explain in full and then allow people to taste how they ended up with that wine in that glass.
Yep. Yes, yeah. So how is the latest Grand Vintage? Are you super proud of that?
We've had a fantastic run of those wines, which are all representative of the vintage, but the 13, 14 and 15 Grand Vintage wines are all very, very strong. Mm-hmm. As a vintage wine, of course, they'll reflect that year. I mean, we do try to blend to style, so we try and smooth out some of the differences between years. But the 13's a really classic, fine line wine. The 14, probably similar to what you've seen in the Blanc de Blanc, quite a mineral and dense wine. Mm-hmm. The 15's an extension of the 14, just with a little bit more sunshine to it, so a more robust sort of style, but still very mineral as well. So what I should point out is we're very happy with those wines to be aged further. We're using very high quality cork, and we fully believe that these wines have got many more years post disgorge as well. So if you've got the 14 Blanc de Blanc, it's moving into a great zone now, being more than 2 years on cork. It's just moving, you know, just the whole evolution of the style just keeps on moving with time.
So how long would you say for me to put them down? Obviously keeping a couple to be, you know, drinking now, but how long would you put them down?
It depends how patient you are and what your personal style preference is, I guess. But
of course.
We hold them for a minimum of 6 months after they're disgorged to before they go to market. So we believe that takes it to a point where it's sort of market friendly. I really like them at about 2 to 3 years under cork, so another year and a half to two years. But we've opened some and had some fantastic wines that have been 5 to 8 years under cork. So I think it comes down to personal preference too, whether you like the freshly disgorged, more yeasty brioche sort of style, or you want them to move further under cork. And they do evolve that tertiary evolution, the more mushroom and toast and that sea brine characters come into it. So it's worthwhile doing that little trial yourself.
That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Just keep a few days. I can be pretty patient. So I'm happy to, you know, go the long haul. I think it'll be worth it.
Yeah, but we certainly, you know, with this brand, it's all about terrage age, but then we're building cork age in on top of that. So certainly not shy of people putting wines away for many years after.
Yeah, well, that is good to know. And actually, I think that's a really good tip, and I'm glad I asked you about that. I'll do as a trial and test, and I'll let you know my thoughts. How's that?
Yeah.
In many years to come. Well, look, Ed, okay. We're just rounding up now. Thank you so much for chatting to us again. I love getting you on the show. We love hearing anything that you can impart to us, and I'm always just so delighted to see how well the House of Arras brand is going, and very happy the new ownership is proving to be a good one.
No, thank you, Yeju, and your listeners. It's always great. So Sunday mornings are always fine, aren't
it? Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Ed. Have a great Easter. Good luck with the vintage, and we'll get you back on the show in about a year's time. How's that?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye, Ed.